Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast, a just for fun production about media that matters and why we love it so much. Your host, Nathan Lamb, is not an amazing gamer, but he sure knows a few people who are. This is our conversation for today. Yes, we're back, and I am thrilled this Friday morning to have two amazing guests in the chat with me today to discuss Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy Discourse specifically. We're going to take a look at the I've tried to isolate to look at the big picture of being a Final Fantasy fan on social and distill it down to the five people you meet in this discourse. And I can't think of two people I would rather have this discussion with. So I'm here to introduce my guests this morning. One guest is Hailey Ginger, who is a master builder of good takes, huge fan of the series, and quiet Tifa fan like myself. You're kind of a low-key Tifa fan like myself.
Absolutely. And I think my current favorite fan theory right now is that Cloud isn't the main character.
Oh, I saw that. Whoa, we got common ground here.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I sent a clip to Nathan last week specifically about that. So that was
where Tifa might have been the
same one. Yeah, exactly.
I think we saw the same video, and I loved that take because
that's a good one.
When you reflect on it, there's some truth to it because the story continues after the big incident, and Tifa's choices throughout the game really impact what everyone does. And if you think back to 10, it's the same thing for Yuna.
Yeah, you can definitely make that comparison. That is a really good point. And she is instrumental in the resolution of everything. And if she's not there, if she's not part of this story, that resolution never happens and the team loses because you cannot get Cloud back without her. And I think that's a very interesting point.
Yeah.
It was a great one. And also, I'm noticing it since I read that, in a lot of circumstances where there's some uncertainty, Tifa is often the person who speaks up first, and she speaks from the heart.
Yeah.
And when she's hesitant, you notice it's because she's evaluating everyone's role in the situation and finding how best to approach it without hurting people.
Mm-hmm. That was a great intro, Hailey Ginger. Is it going to be intro Hailey Ginger and today?
Huh?
Is it going to be Hailey Ginger today? Are we Hailey Ginger? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Either works. Both. It's whatever rolls off the tongue easier today.
Very cool. And my second guest today, you know him from social media. He's been known to respond to crazy memes every now and again when people are throwing out the hot takes. Yeah. Mr. Gwent Champ. Thrilled to have you back.
Yes. Glad to be here talking about this stuff. If Hailey Ginger is a quiet Tifa fan, I'm a loud Tifa fan, have been for quite some time. I'll always represent my girl. I think she is so important to the story, and people don't really recognize that sometimes. I think that stems from a personal bias that needs to be evaluated. I'm Alex Gwentchamp from Michigan. Glad to be discussing this game and games in general with you today.
I'm looking forward to it. And this is, I want to set the parameters because the Final Fantasy discourse can get a little out of pocket at times. I've written about this twice. Once about how it can escalate very seriously. I mean, very quickly. And then also just that it can kind of become a slugfest. And there's people who I think often talk about the series and maybe don't quite see why it appeals to people so much. They kind of have standards and ideas of what it's about. It's just a whole big thing that I think you see with any large fandom. And I'm going to try to unpack some of these things. I've become a big believer in this idea that if you label things, you can sort of make them smaller and more manageable. So there's a couple of things I'm hoping to label today to make them a little easier to manage. We will see. And I think the first ground rule I want to put down is that I want to unequivocally say that the spirit of this exercise is very much in the mindset of the Japanese wabi-sabi aesthetic, which I learned about earlier this year. It might be my favorite thing I learned about all this year. And basically has to do with appreciating the imperfections, finding beauty in them sometimes. And it's a great way to look at media, where you can kind of appreciate and even enjoy the bad at times instead of belaboring it, which I don't think there's a lot of return in belaboring the bad. So that's kind of the context of this whole discussion for me. I'm not here to throw shade. I'm just sort of appreciating some of the things that have made me laugh on occasion when I'm scrolling. But the other thing I'd say is I love the good things in life. I love that which brings joy, stirs emotion, makes us forget our troubles for a while. So that is how I try to approach media in general, and definitely about how I go about enjoying Final Fantasy. And I usually find a way to enjoy each game in the series. So I just wanted to put that out there as a disclaimer, to let everyone know where I'm coming from with this list, because there will be jokes. So hopefully they won't be too badly done. In my five people you meet in the Final Fantasy discourse, I apologize. I'm going to have to start with the hater. I'm sorry. It's kind of inevitable. The hater is usually encountered in the comment section of appreciation posts. That's where you're most likely to find them. Their favorite discussion is how Final Fantasy failed to meet their expectations. They love the sound of their own voice. They hate the sound of joy. And what we can learn from them is that sometimes it's good to keep scrolling or even log off. But now that I've sort of put all that out there in honor of our friend, the hater, who likes to dive in and tell you how whatever game you were loving actually is bad. I do want to.
It sounds like you're describing me. So I'm feeling personally attacked right now.
Oh my God. No. I did not have you. Now, I did classify all of us going into this discussion. I did not have you down as a hater, Gwen. I did not have you down in the hater column, just for the record. I'm not thinking of anyone in particular with these. These are just.
I can think of a few.
But these are just personas that you meet out there to talk about another series that we all love. I'm going to throw them a bone, though. In honor of the hater, what's the worst mini game in the series for each of you?
The worst mini game?
Worst mini game. Yeah. Let's throw the hater a bone.
I mean, it depends on like what you're classifying as a mini game, I guess. Yeah. That is a hard question. The lightning dodging in 10 sucks. I didn't like that a lot.
It's so bad.
I found the boxing, the virtual boxing in 7 Rebirth to be horrendous.
Ridiculous?
I kind of hated it. It's just so hard. Like, there's no reason it should be this hard. It's a rock, paper, scissors game, basically.
Yeah.
Every challenge with jewels is so impossibly hard, I wanted to throw my controller through the damn screen. So I'm going with that as my number three. The final, specifically the final challenge with jewels, or the sit-ups and the pull-ups are like,
oh no, yeah.
Oh my God.
No.
Yeah, it's a rhythm game, and if you can't nail that rhythm immediately, you're just doomed.
Yeah. When they take the visual away from you, it's like, come on.
Yep. Yeah, same. Voiced by Alejandro Saab, by the way. Jules is voiced by Akihiko.
Akihiko!
Yep, yes. Alejandro Saab. That was one and done. I saw that guy again, and I was like, yep, I'm going to do what I need to do to move on with the story, and you will never see me in your gym again. Thank you.
Yeah, I tried.
So for me, I was going to say my worst one was the soccer-like tournament with Nanaki. Like, can we not force sports?
Which one is that in?
That's in Reaper.
You didn't do the stupid crap?
I
didn't have to? I thought it was obligated, man.
You got to play it once. It's part of like the narrative, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, it's the same narrative thing where you like are finding the swimsuit inspiration for the girls.
Yes, I did. Yep, I did do that. Yep, that was. I think I might have used the internet. I was like, okay, I'm getting at the point where I'm going to put this game down for a week if I don't wrap this up. So I think I might have resorted to the. Oh, I do remember the soccer game. Yes. Oh my god, that was pretty wild.
I hated that with a passion, and I hated that it was unavoidable. You had to do it. I'm like,
oh yeah.
I didn't mind Queen's Blood because it was fun and it wasn't obligated.
Queen's Blood is a lot of fun. I like Queen's Blood. It's a good time.
You, Nathan, you've never played Gwent. And I'm curious to see if someday you do play The Witcher 3 and go through that. Because for me, I felt like Queen's Blood was a shameless knockoff of Gwent, but not as good and engaging. And the quest line wasn't as fun. Whoa, there was like some cool elements, but it's like, I don't know. I didn't really vibe with Queen's Blood. It felt more chaotic than Gwent. Gwent is like, if you have your deck, you can pretty much work your way out of any situation. Whereas with Queen's Blood, it felt like sometimes a guy would just start throwing like status at you and you're just like, wait, well, okay, there goes my whole, it's just been annihilated because I just put one card in the wrong place. And I don't.
The luck of the draw is a factor in Queen's Blood.
Yes, it's a huge factor.
I'm going to have to check that out in Witcher 3, I think. Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, the luck of the draw is a factor. I have times where I was getting beat several times with my deck, and then when I got dealt the right starting hand, I just completely destroyed the computer. So it's definitely, if you get all your big guns out early, that's a challenge. So I like that. Yeah. I would have to say worst mini game in the series. I mean, Final Fantasy X, and just to bring Wabi Sabi back into this, because I want to have this permeated a little bit. So Final Fantasy X has a lot of the worst mini games in the series.
I love Blitzball.
It's all better than like Kamari's Bug Race or or Chocobo Racing. There's this guy I used to watch who made a top 10 list of worst mini games, and all of those were on it. And his review of the Chocobo Racing is just he runs around, he gets hit with a bird, he yells, "Fuck!" And like he gets hit with another one and he yells it. And then finally at the end, he like screams it like out of frustration. And I was like, yep, that's kind of what it was like. I think probably the Chocobo Racing in 10 was the worst. And I think the 10 is a good example of how you can have horrendous mini games that are so bad, but you can still have the game be a classic. That's kind of what I remind people when they're ripping on anything in the newest really Final Fantasy. I'm like, even the classics had some bad mini games. You know,
I mean,
that perspective.
My criticisms, my like core criticisms of the newer games don't stem from that. It's more the narrative, like how the narrative is being treated, because the most important thing for me in any game is really its story. And if the story isn't good, I'm going to be critical of it. And in the case of, say, you know, Rebirth and Remake, you're talking about a game that I played upwards of 30 times and like have memorized. So it's a story I love and I expect it to be treated with like a certain level of reverence. And a lot of, you know, I joke that I was a hater, but really my criticism comes from a place of love. It's for wanting more from this piece of media that I really enjoy and not getting exactly, you know, what I was hoping for.
Yeah, that can be tough. That can definitely be tough. That whole expectations game. I've been bit by that with Final Fantasy II. That was my issue with Remake, I think. The next one I want to do is The Specialist. The Specialist is the next type of person you're going to meet in the discourse. They are usually encountered posting about their game. Their favorite discussion is anything about their game. They love their game. They hate the haters and the other factions within the game fandom sometimes if they feel people are disrespecting their game. So they, it's kind of a dual-edged coin of a lot of love and a lot of strong feelings about whenever their title comes up in the discourse. And what we can learn from them is anything you ever wanted to know about their game. You might be a specialist,
but nothing
I'm
else.
Not gonna lie. You might
absolutely
be
the... me. Hey, I talk about a lot of stuff.
I know. Oh, and I want to give you subsets for the specialist because there's two varieties of him that I've him or her them that I've noticed. There's the bull, which is the never been better guy. And this is the guy who is all in on the notion that the series has never been better. And I love that for them. I think that's great. I think anything in life that makes you happy and you're fired up over it. Uh-huh. I mean, to be honest, I'm having more fun with Rebirth than I've had with the series in a long time. And I like that. I'm enjoying it. And I'm willing to go back and forth with you on this one, Glenn. We will have some fun with this as well. So I
look,
I got nothing but
again,
love for the ball.
I the game is good up to a certain point, and then I was just like, I don't know, man.
Yep.
So you're taking your sweet time with it in the same way that I'm taking my sweet time with a lot of the games that I'm playing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I had to finish Trails from Zero, which was amazing, and now it's Rebirth, and I'm loving it. The other one is the bear. He's the antiquarian, I think is how it's pronounced. Uh-huh. They love the old series, but can't get into it now. And no, these two are often arguing in the comments, the guy who thinks it's the best now versus the person who loved it back in the day and is like, just kind of fell out of it. So when it comes up, they've kind of got that, yeah, that used to be my thing. It's not anymore. You see that sometimes. But I have one for the specialist. Your favorite party in the series?
My favorite party in the series?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're talking about like in game, not like mixing characters. Okay. I want to be a homer. I am firmly of the belief that the best party in Final Fantasy VII and one of the best parties in the series is Cloud, Tifa, Cid. You have a perfect balance of magic and attack. And if you set up all of their limit breaks together, you can potentially do as much damage as Knights of the Round or more, assuming you have the right build on everybody. They are unstoppable. I discovered that, I think, in college after playing the game several times, because I used to be a Vincent guy. But if I'm being honest, Vincent actually sucks as a party member. Like in the game, he sucks because he's pure chaos. He can't when he does his limit break, you can't control him anymore. He just does what he does. And sometimes he heals the boss. Like, no, it's not great. That's a terrible. I'm sorry. That sucks. He's not cool. He looks awesome. But in terms of pure damage output balance, you can't really get better than those three. And that's my party. That's my home team.
That's your play. Now you could say, because I like how you went with party and battle. I was just thinking like party as a whole, but party and battle is a valid answer because that's kind of where your mind went with that one. So I'll take either. If you want like your favorite grouping in battle or your favorite party as a whole, either is a valid answer for me.
Yeah.
How about you, Allie?
So I'm going to go with 10 for this one, just because my party build would be similar to his. But it was always Yuna, Lulu, Titus, and then, oh gosh, now I'm forgetting his character. The
Waka?
Bulky Beast. Not Waka. The Bulky
Kamari.
Beast.
Kamari?
Yes.
You're the Kamari stand.
Nice.
Because I like him. I also like a bunch of others, but you have so many that can come and go within your group, depending upon where you are in the story, that like, I'm a Lulu sucker. I enjoy magic casters in general. And so like, I try to fill the last spot with somebody that kind of fills in the bald spots. And since I'm always a heavy magic person, I try to get something that I guess is kind of a attack absorber, a sponge.
The tank. Yeah, you need that.
No, that is a really good. That's a good one. I can't really poke any holes in that. That's a solid lineup.
I love the party in 10. I have to say, I usually am like Auron, Waka, and Riku. But I mean,
I do adore Riku.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that group. It is a great group. And the battle system in 10, the way they really perfected like the turn-based battle system in 10. It was so good. Mm. It was one of the most fun in the series. I could play that today and have a grand old time. it's good. For me, probably no surprise here. Final Fantasy IX, the group, just I love everything about it. I love how that one is kind of like, it's sort of centered on the characters. It really is. And I just love the dynamic Zidane, Dagger, Steiner, and Vivi. And then it expands a little bit, but really it's those four. You know, and I love the other characters too. And I love their moments in the story. If they ever remake it and expand it, I'm going to probably have a grand old time with it. But yeah, just such a great character-based story, and the way they fit together, and just some of the best moments in the series really come from the way that the characters interact with each other. Yeah, it's as good as it gets. I love that one for a reason. It starts with the cast for me. So in terms of, and yeah, Steiner, by the way, is like, Steiner and Freya, when you get the two of them going in the party, they're tough to beat. All right, so I got the next one here. This is the meh, because this is the discourse. I didn't say fans very specifically, because the discourse also has the meh. And I have a friend who I correctly identified as the meh. We're friends, but I've talked about Final Fantasy with her a few times, and I can tell she's the meh. So I was like, you're the meh, aren't you? And I was like, yep. And I even got the varietal there. So this one, I didn't go down their whole list. Oh, actually, I did. Oh, very good, very good. Okay, so they are usually encountered in chats between RPG fandoms or about RPGs in general. They will wander into discussions about Final Fantasy at times, but it's not, you can see them basically anywhere RPGs are discussed. And their favorite discussion is reminding people that Final Fantasy isn't the only RPG.
I do say this a lot, actually.
It's a valid point. I mean, and it's yeah. I mean, no, it's good. There's different ways that they go about it, and I'm going to get into that a little bit too. But they love it when their game is mentioned in the same sentence as Final Fantasy. They do. I get it. I totally get it.
I can hear a bunch of Xenoblade people cheering in the background right now.
What's up? Oh yeah, exactly.
We
oh
exist.
My gosh.
Or, we matter.
Studio 33. It was Studio 33 last week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we saw very that. True.
That actually inspired this podcast, and we will get to that in a bit. That is definitely on my list. But they hate it when people are raving about something in Final Fantasy as if it's new, and it's something that their series did better. Oh boy, I've seen that one before. You run into that one, you got to proceed with caution. You know, be like, okay, all right, let's pump the brakes here. Let's break this down. Is this, yeah. You know, because I'm curious to hear more, because I'm always up for hearing about something I don't know about, you know?
Right. This is where I interject and say that Dragon Quest invented much of what Final Fantasy either perfected or implemented.
Yep.
Love it. So, you know, just gotta put that out there. Gotta represent Dragon Quest a little bit.
Has the group finished Dragon Quest 11?
Yes, I have.
Was it good?
I personally have not.
I haven't either. I'm like halfway, but I want to hear because I like what I played.
Yeah, it's wild. It is a wild experience. It is almost two different games, kind of. I can't speak too much on that without spoiling a massive plot point.
I'll go back to this one.
It's a really good entry point for the series. I've played 5 and 8 as well, and they're both really good. But 11 has a great cast of characters. It's got that hopeful element that we talked about last time that I've been really compelled with and recently with games. Yeah. Very whimsical, fantastical. And I Silvando, one of the best characters Square Enix has ever made, bar none. Just a fantastic character.
Is he the thief, or is he? Which one is he?
He's the. I don't even know how to describe him. He's like
the horse. Is he the guy they meet in the race, where he like helps them with the race?
He's like a dancer. I don't know. It's like kind of a. He's a buff, basically. He's like a buff for the party, swordsman. he's very flamboyant in a way that is truly awesome.
That game has the fun factor. It definitely has the fun factor. And I love that perspective on it. So I'm going to break the Met into two types of people, because there's two very different types of Met that I've run into. There's the bouncer. And this is the RPG fan who can't get into Final Fantasy. It's just not for them. I have friends who are the bouncer, and I'll like try to explain it to them. I sort of wrote a piece about a year ago. It's called What the Haters Don't Get About Final Fantasy. I maybe should have said What the Bouncers Don't Get About Final Fantasy. And I say it with all the love in the world, is that I think they expect Final Fantasy to be something that's not. And I'm like, it's not high art. It probably won't change your life. But if you enjoy Star Wars, Kurosawa, Westerns, if you enjoy those genres of media, you're probably going to enjoy Final Fantasy, because it's a lot like those sorts of things. It's going to have cornball silly moments, and it's going to have great moments that completely land. And it's going to, you're probably going to enjoy quite a bit of it, even if it's not life-changing or giving you a new philosophy on life. And I sort of say that like to sort of set the bar, because I think people hold it up to this incredibly high bar that like I would assign to maybe the Persona series, which is all of those things consistently. And I will not muddy the waters by starting that beef, but Final Fantasy is good, enjoyable, always has innovated, always changes it up. There's fandoms out there. I was talking with some of them this week. They're so frustrated that the series they love, the IP they love, just will never evolve. It's just repeating the same thing over and over again. I'm not going to say which fandom it is, because I don't even want to go there. But like Final Fantasy does always do something new. It does new stories. It tries new things. A lot of people want that from what they're following. So that's my message for the bouncer. And then there's the other one, which my friend is. My friend is this one, the Met hater. The Met hater, I am friends with the Met hater. It's cool. They introduced me to a new series that I love. They're the RPG fan who's aggravated their series doesn't get the same level of attention as Final Fantasy. I've met some Yakuza fans who kind of come at the Persona fandom like this. I've seen that dynamic. But like they're sort of a little meh and a little bit like, you know, they're like, their series does things great. Why can't we talk about that? So those are the varietals of the meh. So in honor of the meh, what's a great, you can pick the one you want, a great game that you bounced off of, or a game that you're always happy when you see people trying it. You can pick which one you want there. Either a great game you bounced off of, or one that you're always like, just sort of kindles a little joy in your heart when you see somebody picking up that game and trying it.
To do both.
Yeah, let's do it. We got time.
Okay. Ginger can go first.
Okay, so the one that I get excited when I see people talk about, because it's not talked about as much as I would love to see it talked about, is Shadow Hearts. It was PlayStation 2 series, RPG turn-based. Very interesting storyline. Like, storylines are what suck me in. And that was my big, like, I get really excited when I see people talk about it. The one that bounced for me, and I know this is going to piss some people off, but Xenoblade Grand Torna specifically is the first one I tried out of the series, and the controls were not intuitive to me, and I wanted so badly to get into it, and I just could not.
That was Xenoblade Chronicles 2 for me.
Yeah, I can't remember which one, the Golden Country, Torna Golden Country, I believe, but that was it, and I haven't given it another shot.
Same.
I have friends that really are like, you need to give it a shot. And I'm like, yeah, but that was not my cup of coffee, my friend.
Same. I rage quit. Actually, one of the first real conversations, you both know Angel, I think. One of the first real conversations I had with Angel from Social was he loved to play Chronicles 2. And I rage quit it. And we talked about it. Like, he was posting about it. I was like, yeah, I wanted to like that, but I rage quit. And we actually like talked about it. We like went back and forth, and he like gave me some perspective on it, so I didn't throw it in the trash or sell it. I still have it on my shelf. He convinced me to give it another try someday, but yeah, that was I feel you on that, Ali. I had the same experience.
I'm gonna rip on that for a second, because this is a very unpopular opinion, and I'm kind of ashamed of this, but the game like that for me kind of was Final Fantasy IX. In that, so I played seven, I played eight, I played Tactics, and I loved all those games. Oh. Tactics is the best of the bunch, then seven, then eight, and then I played nine, which came out, God, what, how old was I? It's probably high school first, or like eighth grade. It's probably eighth grade. Eighth grade was a hard eight. We talked last time about the time in your life that you come to a game, right? Yeah. So I came to Final Fantasy IX when I was in eighth grade. It one of the hardest years of my life. And I just did not vibe with the game. I didn't find the characters to be relatable to me at that time, in a way that I did with the other games. So I beat it. I played it twice. And I think I respect the artistry of it. But because I came to that game at a specific time in my life, yeah, where I wasn't really ready to embrace whatever it was trying to tell me,
yeah,
I didn't vibe with it. So while I appreciate it being one of the greatest entries in the series, if not the best, it wasn't for me because it came to it at not a great time.
That happens.
So
that definitely, at least you're aware of it. Maybe someday it will click for you.
Yeah, I have to revisit it.
Yeah. And what's the one that gives you joy when you see people picking it up?
A Persona. 100%. I mean, there's a lot of games that I've played. I just love it when people branch out and try different RPGs. You know, we're kind of talking about the people who are like, oh, you only play Final Fantasy. Yeah. It's really cool to see people branch out. And having a lot of my online mutuals kind of jump into Persona first time and really embrace it and be like, whoa, this is storytelling like I've never seen before. I didn't think I'd like this game, but this is one of my favorite games of all time now. I love that.
That's the one that warms my heart as well. When people pick up Persona, or they pick up a Persona spinoff that I liked. Yeah, and I think the one that bouncing off of, I mean, I guess I could count, it would be Xenoblade 2, and it would be Persona initially, would be my great games that I bounced off of. But, you know, I know a lot of people who bounced off Tokyo Mirage Sessions. I'm going to do a whole conversation on Tokyo Mirage Sessions in June to try and convince all those Atlas fans to check out that goofy little game that they haven't played yet. So it should be fun.
Yeah. I initially bounced off Persona 5. Well, almost. Because it was free. I think I got the PS5 and they were doing that, like, you download a couple games for free. Like God of War, Persona 5 was one of them. So it's just like, I've heard people talk about this. I'll check it out. It's supposed to be really good. And then, you know, it definitely was not anything like what I was expecting. And I think I was halfway through Kamoshida's Palace. I'm like, this is the weirdest fucking game I have ever played. Yes. I do not know if this is for me. But one, I think you get to the date in the calendar with Shio.
Yep.
I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah. This story just went way up here now. We're getting real. The cast felt good, but it just felt like, okay, so like, why are we doing what we're doing? And then solidified, this is why we are doing what we're doing. This got heavy. I'm all in now. And then, you know, the cast kind of expands. I really loved Yusuke. I thought he was this weird creep at first. And then what's so good about those games is these characters evolve throughout the story and you unpack, you know, who they really are over the course of engaging with them and the story, the main storyline.
The next one, this one, I'm going to have a tip of the cap to this person in the discourse because they are the reason we are here today. They performed a vital service. I want to thank these people. North. This is the Poop Polster. The Poop Polster is in the discourse. He is just there for eyeballs or shits and giggles. They're the corporate jesters of the discourse. They are usually encountered wherever the discourse is at. They love attention. They hate. I'll give you a little quote from Oscar Wilde. The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. And that's kind of how the Poop Pile Stir feels. They want to be in the mix. Their favorite discussion, should Final Fantasy be turn-based? Sorry. Okay, so that's a specific shout-out to something that was in the discourse last week. The Poop Polster, you know, they... Final Fantasy is big enough so that even people who don't follow the series, sometimes that's what people are talking about on a given day, and everyone wants to throw in their two cents and, you know, be part of the discussion, and I love that. A lot of times when, you know, something like, you know, Expedition 33 is trending and everyone's talking about it, you're like, how could we tie this in with Final Fantasy and really rile up that fan base and, you know, get them chatting? And then you're like, well, how about Final Fantasy being turn-based again? No one's ever brought up that topic before. So let me see. All right. So what is the Poop Polster? What is my question for the Poop Polster? You know, I was going to ask for your hottest Final Fantasy take. I don't know if the fandom can handle much more trolling this week, but it's been a lot. If you want to throw your hottest Poop Polster Final Fantasy take at me, how about it?
I'll go with my current one, which is in light of Claire Obscure. Final Fantasy is a mainstream RPG. It is people's stepping stone into the world. Most people will not start with, you know, Octopath Traveler or Persona and so on. It is a stepping stone. So by giving up turn-based, it literally is staying in tune with the modern era. You've got action RPGs, and that's the thing right now. So, like, real-time action. You're looking at The Last of Us. You're looking at Horizon Zero Dawn, and so on.
Ghost of Tsushima.
Turn-based is no longer Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy and Square Enix, they have made it very clear that that is separate. They have made that clear that it is separate through Octopath Traveler and through Bravely Default. And this started back with the DS.
Yeah.
It has been going for quite some time. And the people who are refusing to accept the change are those who are living in nostalgia.
Yeah. I think it's a really good, really thought out point. That is where the series is going. It's not a hot take. I'm going to just kind of elaborate a little bit on Hailey Ginger's point here. I loved the turn-based games, and I like some of the action elements. And perhaps my unpopular take is that I think 16 does battle better than Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth. I think what works well for 16 for me is that you have one point of view, right? You are controlling Clive. And so you're doing a lot of stuff, but it feels focused because you are controlling him and you don't have to worry about what everybody else is doing. In Remake and Rebirth and some other Square Enix action RPG kind of titles, there's too much fucking going on. I am ADHD and it feels like what I call diarrhea fireworks. You've got Tifa zipping across the screen, Yuffie's just throwing shit, Cloud's throwing his sword, Barret's shooting that stuff, and you're kind of pew 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 pew, like rotating between the characters. I have no idea what the fuck is going on. I tried doing like the Bahamut fight in Remake in the simulator, and I just never could do it. You don't know what the fuck is happening. It's like, oh, he's gonna do Giga Player, and then all of a sudden it happens. You're like, okay, cool. Like in original Seven, you could guard. You could be like, okay, something big's about to hit me. I'm going to guard. I can see it's happening on the screen. It's just like a little flash, a little text, tiny ass text, small text. Oh, they're going to do this attack. And you're like, it just happens. You get wiped out. There's too much going on. I do not like it. So like, I will play the game wrong and mostly just like, used one character and occasionally rotate out if I have to like heal or something, but it's just there's too much happening. I don't dig it. I think that sucks. So there is a happy medium. I think 16 does a good job, but that's because you're really focused on one character. You can focus on everything you're doing with that one character in a boss fight. So it's a little bit easier to manage what's happening on screen. I would love to see a game balance out those elements and make it a little bit easier to rotate between characters and it not feel just like total overstimulation and overload. So that's where I'm at with that. It's not really a hot take, maybe. I don't know. It's just that's my personal, you know, experience with that. The other Final Fantasy main take that I think is important to me is I feel narratively the series hasn't been quite as cohesive since 10. I like a good narrative, and I played 12 and kind of liked that there was some good stuff, but the main character is largely forgettable. I don't even remember his name right now. The game was good and fun, but I don't really remember much about it. And then 13, you had a really kind of compelling character in Lightning, but I could not tell you what the hell that story was about or what the villain's motivations were or anything. It just felt like very abstract in a way that was not compelling to me. Whereas, like, you know, 7, Cloud's trying to find himself. He's like, he's on a personal journey to remember and figure out who he is as a person. And I think that's very compelling.
Yeah.
10, Yuna's journey is something you can grab onto and say, this is the narrative. This is the main story arc. I don't know. And then, you know, with the remake games, it's like they're telling the same story with different elements, but the different elements they're adding in kind of muddy what the original did so well. And I find that frustrating. And 16 was good, but I love 16 until the end, really. I thought 16 was the best one I'd played since 10. And then the ending was like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
Like, how am I supposed to read this? Because I can take it two ways. And I'm not really satisfied with either of the ways I could read this. Same with Rebirth, you know, and Remake. The last chapters of both games are the worst chapters in the games. They're just like, what are you doing? Yeah. This is stupid. I'm sorry. This is shitty.
Honestly, is welcome. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. So because you gave a lot there, I would say I'll sort of reverse address it. The Final Fantasy, the one of the things I love about Persona is that it builds to a big finish. The Trails series, which I love, and both of you need to try someday. The Trails series builds to a big finish. Final Fantasy, as often as not, in the final act, things just kind of pile up instead of build. And I'm okay with that. I can live with it. It's fine. But it's not like Persona 3, where you have like the arc of Agus that sort of ties everything together in the final act so that you can really get this, really drives home what they're cooking with that whole story.
Yeah.
And it's just different. I've accepted that they're different. I would say 16, it's funny. I loved 16, how it was cohesive after 15 was kind of a mess in some ways. I prefer the combat in Rebirth. I love the chaos of it. I love having Cloud, Tifa, and Barret just go to town on whatever. It is
you
fun.
Do
I can
you,
totally
man.
See how it's not for everyone. But and then just the other thing, I think my hot take is going to be the laugh in 10 is fine. The part where Tidus and Yuna laugh, like, and this is going to go back to like the Wabi Sabi thing again. Is it silly? Is it ridiculous? Hey! Is it silly and ridiculous? Yep. Is it, so in the context of the moment, what Yuna is doing in that scene is kind of wonderful. Because if you go and watch the whole scene, not just the part where they're laughing and being silly, I love what she's trying to do for him in that scene. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of appreciate that it's silly. But just, you know, if you only saw the part where they laugh and it's goofy, you're kind of not getting the full story there. And I don't know if that's a hot take or not. I just, look, you gave a lot there, Glenn, that I kind of wanted to respond to. I guess the other one that I would say is that the combat system in 13 is pretty awesome once the game actually backs off and lets you play with it. It's a lot of fun.
I thought the game elements of 13 were really good. I thought that was a really cool system. Same with 12, really.
Yeah.
But I just, again, they don't stick out for me because I find the story to be a little bit lacking.
Yeah, it definitely is. You got a visitor.
I do. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. I have one too. Jay actually came in, like my last podcast, he came in and he let us know. He's like, when are you going to do a blooper episode? I was like, how many mistakes do you think I'm making? Like,
It is the theme of the topic. Wabi-sabi.
Wabi-sabi, exactly. Yeah.
I think the reason 16 doesn't hit initially is because the major point of, this is the theme of what they're doing, doesn't happen until the events with Sid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
it kind of throws you.
You feel like you're lost and wandering until you get to that
into space. Yeah.
That's a fair point with that one. And Sid was, I didn't get into 16 right away. It took a little while for me. And I also love how 16 has a lot of elements of Persona, and especially Persona 4. That part where he fights his shadow. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was cool as hell, actually. That was definitely one of the high points of that game.
I would actually say that is a hallmark of it. You've mentioned before that cat quests are a hallmark of it. But if you think about it, fighting your shadow self is a big hallmark of RPGs in general. Like Legend of Zelda, you've got sort of a thing like that going on. It is also done in Shadow Hearts. And, you know, I think it's a big representation of inner turmoil, which brings me back to the whole Final Fantasy thing of it doesn't always hit because life isn't perfect. Yeah. And Final Fantasy is more of a representation of just what people are going through. It doesn't quite have the solid endings because life does not have solid
either. Yeah.
Can I share a hot take in this group? I'll share a hot take in this group. The Barrett scenes, because I'm going to shoehorn this into the discussion one way or another. I played the Barrett scene in Rebirth this morning, which was a big part of why I bought Rebirth. Mm-hmm. It was Yuffie and it was Barrett. It was really more Barrett. And Remake was a disappointment for me. I had big expectations. And maybe it was the wrong time in my life because my daughter was about to be born. I had a lot going on at that point. I just kind of fell flat for me. Rebirth, I'm liking a lot more. The scene with Barrett and Dine really worked for me. Watched it with my son this morning. I will explain why. I know not everyone loved it. So was Dine exactly how I would have imagined him if I were direct? No, not exactly. But the fact that he and Barrett had a lot of the same emotions that they were carrying around for a very long time. And Barrett was able to see what that did to Dine. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Dine also has a gun on his arm. I felt why it worked for me was that Barrett was sort of able to face his past and also see what carrying around that kind of baggage can do to you. Now, with Dine's dialogue, if I was to break it down, I'm not sure I loved any specific part of what he had to say, but I think overall how the scene worked, and especially the performance by Barrett's voice actor and the way the experience was put together, very much landed for me. That's why I loved it. So that's my hot take. I thought the Barrett scene in Rebirth was really good.
You liked the boss fight that immediately follows?
No, I haven't done that. That's right where I'm at. I probably
you broke it up. Look at you.
I'm right in the middle of it, man. Yeah, I'm doing real time.
You are playing the game in such a different way than me. Because
I had kids who had to go to school and everything. Look, you know, it's like six in the morning.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Get ready.
maybe that's a good thing because you're allowing yourself to have that time to breathe. That's my big criticism. It's like these big impactful moments happen to these characters and you don't really get to sit in what happened to them very long before the next big boss fight happens or something stupid happens. And you're like, I gotta go run after that thing now. And you're like, you just like experienced trauma.
Yeah.
And instead of grappling with that and going like, what did I just feel? What did I just think? It's like, oh shit. They're the Turks. We gotta go fight the Turks. It's like, so I guess I understand where you're coming from now, but I immediately went right through, you know, to the next scene where Palmer busts in. You're like, you're killing the vibe here, man. Like, you really totally ruined the feeling of this with this gimmicky boss fight.
Oh, no. So, something to look forward to.
Yeah, we talked about the Persona series and in Final Fantasy, and I really wish these games let you sit with the characters for a longer period of time, because a lot of what they're feeling and thinking is just left unsaid. And you don't get to really work through things together ever. Like, it's just...
It's a Final Fantasy thing.
And that's, you know, one of my biggest criticisms of the series as a whole is not being able to really, you know, sit with the characters in what they're experiencing and what they're feeling, unless you, the player, are doing that. When you had the old dialogue boxes, or you didn't know where to go next in a video game when you're a kid, you have a little bit more time to process maybe the conversations that happened and what's going on. You don't really get that though. It's just kind of like moving you along to the next thing without letting things air out.
Yeah. Hey, I have a question to bring up.
Yes, yes.
Regarding this exact topic. So for what I've noticed in 16, you get those time to work through those feelings, but you have to do it in the side quests. If you choose to skip the side quests, you miss so much world building and lore. Do you feel like 16 has done it better at making it to where if people want to process the emotions that they're going through with these characters, do you feel like they actually gave that ability for those who wanted it?
Yeah.
Or do you think it needs to be part of the main line?
I think the biggest reveals need to happen within the main story so that it cannot be missable. I think you can supplement a lot of that with the side quests. That's what you should be looking to do, is just really adding additional layers to it. Like, whatever a character's main arc is, it needs to happen in the main story. But if you want to dig deeper, it should happen within those side quests. I do think 16 did a pretty good job of that. It's one of those things where the ending kind of sullies a lot of what was being built up. Because depending on how you interpret how that game ended, determines, you know, like thematically how the character completely journeyed through the story and what they felt and how those feelings end up getting resolved. That sucks. I'm like, that is very frustrating.
Yeah. So basically, because I want to circle back on this now. For me, like, the one thing I was happy with the ending. I think the thing that bothered me is that it had this very real story about exploiting people and resources to provide energy, which is sort of a core Final Fantasy series conceit of what if magic was real and in society, how would human nature apply itself to magic? You have this incredible setup and premise, and then the final resolution of it is some weird albino mystical guy from the dark side of the moon. And it's sort of like we went from human nature to this weirdo bad guy who's monologuing, and Clive throws a massive fireball at him, which was awesome, but it was a little bit I definitely identify with people who didn't appreciate that sort of shift, because it really went some interesting places with that storyline, and then it kind of got shunted off to the side during the final.
No, look, the most interesting parts of Final Fantasy games are the internal conflicts of the characters, right? The external stuff is sort of secondary, right? Going back to 7, the stuff with Meteor and Sephiroth, it's like, whatever, man. Like, it's kind of like, it's just there. You got to solve the problem. He's a compelling villain for the most part, but the resolution of all of that, it's like, it doesn't hit that hard. It's what the character's journey and how they overcome their own demons is way more interesting than whatever external problem they're facing is. Like, Ultima is kind of an interesting villain in 16, but Clive's journey with Jill and his brother is way more compelling than whatever's going on externally. I was like, okay. And same with 6 and 10. I don't really care. Tidus is trying to find his dad.
Yeah.
His dad is 10. Okay. Whatever, man. Like, it's just seeing them grow as people and overcome their own insecurities and face their fears is where Final Fantasy excels. The other stuff is, you know, it's the same thing with like Star Wars. The conflict between Luke and Vader and learning from Obi-Wan and finding out who he is far more interesting than the Death Star getting blown up at the end of the movie. So,
I can definitely feel that. And that's also the same with 9. I couldn't really tell you what Garland's plan was in 9. I liked everything along the lines of what you were just saying. And I will go to the last person in our Final Fantasy discourse. This took a little longer than I planned, but I think it worked out all right. So the final one is the fan of the series. And this one is self-explanatory. I can't really give a lot of examples of the fan of the series. I consider myself one. And I think Allie is also one. I might have misclassified Allie, but I would consider all of us to be fans of the series, although I think you skew specialist a little, Gwent. But but fan of the series is that I play each game in it. I sort of go in with like measured expectations. There's things I'm going to really love. In playing Rebirth, the parts where they redo Nobuo Uematsu's music, there's just times where I will listen to like On Our Way for like 5 minutes, and I'm just like so moved by Nobuo Uematsu. He's kind of breaking my heart again. So there's those moments that I find in it that make it worthwhile. And it's like, it's really that. Like, you could definitely pick on the bad parts of it, but to borrow a quote from Civ 6, there's this famous quote of like, you can't go around arresting the thieves guild, you'd be at it all day. In life, if you're gonna belabor the bad, you're kind of gonna be at it all day. So it's like you enjoy the pieces that you can find enjoyable and sort of latch onto those things and hold on to it. My questions for the fans of the series, in honor of the fans of the series, favorite moment in the Final Fantasy series? I can go first. I posted about it this week.
I gotta think about this. That magic
card set, they made a card for You Are Not Alone, which was amazing. It has Dagger and Zidane with Steiner and Quina all fighting. And it has the quote from Dagger where she says, "You don't get it. You've been looking out for us. But this whole time, we've been looking out for you." But yeah, the You Are Not Alone scene in Final Fantasy IX, just amazing. It actually goes to a premise from my last podcast where I talked to a social worker about care for the caregiver. And it's an application of what I was talking about there, and that Zidane is somebody who cares for other people and picks them up. But in that moment, he needs somebody else to pick him up. And the whole party comes in. It's just amazing. It's like my favorite moment in the series. I don't even think it's close. I'm going to get that card. I'm going to frame it. I'm going to put it on my wall because I love that moment. So that's for me. Anyone want to go next?
I gotta think a little bit more. This is a hard one.
Will it involve Tifa?
I think so. Yeah.
Playing piano with Tifa was pretty amazing too, I must say.
And like, I'm gonna be honest, my favorite as far as like Tifa goes, scene wise, is her in the live stream trying to pull Cloud back. Like, that is the truest depth of friendship. You like, we're ship wars aside, that is the truest moment of friendship. Like, that is a best friend moment, because, you know, I kind of relate to it to a friend who was dealing with alcoholism, and he was drinking way too much, and, you know, he joked that there was the dark version of him, and then when he was drunk, and then there was real him. And wading through that with a friend to get them back to their true reality and not whatever the demons in your head are saying is such a huge moment. And for Tifa with Cloud, you know, that is, she knows that there's something wrong. She does what she can. And they've gone through so much trauma up to this point, and she's still there fighting to make sure that he's still him. And to go and make sure to get that him that's still there and make sure it stays.
I can't wait to see it in the new ones.
It's, I'm pretty much on the same page, because that scene, I think of a little pixels where Cloud is seeing himself in that, in the live stream. But then you start to see he's morphing into Zach. And then Zach appears, and it's like, oh my God, you know, oh, he was not there. But then you see the soldier grunt run in and check on her. And you know, oh my God, he was there. He was there the whole time. He saw everything. He just wasn't the main guy. He was in the background, quietly observing things. He did experience a lot of what he said he experienced, but it wasn't from, you know, the perspective that he said he did. And it's this really great moment. That's like one of the great twists in the series. And the follow-up, of course, though, is then I always love the Under the High Wind scene, because you get one of those rare, really intimate moments between two characters. And I think it's the most romantic moment in the entire series, where she's saying, like, you know, in my heart, I heard you calling out to me. And he realizes, like, he actually, like, was protecting her while she was in the live stream. And they get to hash out some of the feelings that they've had pent up for so long and misunderstood for so long. And it ends with, you know, words aren't the only way to tell a person how you're feeling. And you're like, holy shit. Fade to black. Everything's great. You don't get to see what happened, but it's like, that is what I really want more of in this series. Ever since that moment, I've wanted more of that, because it's like two people just kind of working through what they're struggling with together and coming together closer than ever, because you don't know if you have tomorrow. Tomorrow is not promised. And that's always stuck with me. I thought those two parallel scenes, companion scenes, really sell the entire internal struggle that these characters have been working through the entire game. And it really lands, because their stories are so entwined. You know, you've had them experience a lot of the same trauma and have to work through that since they were kids. And it's heavy, and it's great.
That's great.
Good storytelling.
I'm sorry. I love that you mentioned Under the High Wind, because I'm going to tell you a story that you did not know yet, Gwen. So after I posted that meme about Cloud having a cannon ship, and people started responding, the first thing I did was I went to DMs, and I went to someone I trust who's knowledgeable. And I was like, Allie, like, did Cloud and Tifa become a thing, like, in Final Fantasy VII? Because honestly, I don't know. And Allie, like, gave me the answer. I was like, oh, okay, all right, thank you so much. And then I was able to, like, go back and address it. But, like, that's sort of how I handled that whole situation.
Look,
and it's good to have friends, you know.
That's right. I mean, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I know. What can you do with that? It's that admission again. I honestly did not know. It did not catch my interest, and I always bounced off that.
Man,
piece.
You're crazy. That's, I know. That's wild. That was when I was a kid. That blew me away. That scene had me floored. I was like, they're doing this in a game? Damn. Cool. Okay. All right. You know, there are very few games that have like pulled at my heartstrings, but that's definitely one that has done it. I love the setup. Like the payoff is just so good. You have two characters who have gone through horrible, horrible things together. And then to find comfort in one another, you're like, man, hell yeah. God, thanks for that payoff. It's kind of, you know, you get a teaser of that in Remake if you got the Tifa resolution scene where, you know, he goes and meets her in the garden and she starts bawling her eyes out and he pulls her close and she's like, you know, we have lost everything and we're losing everything again. And you're like, yeah, this is why this story resonates, because these people have lost everything they've ever had in their lives. And they have to rebuild. And it's just a compelling narrative arc.
I like how Rebirth trolled fans like when you go to go on the sky ride and it's the big date scene and they're on the same page. They hold hands without even really thinking about it. And then they're like, nope, actually, you need to do a side quest. Before I was like, oh, man, I bet this really was like a gut punch.
No. Look,
really looking forward to that scene.
You're gonna get it later. That's just like the teaser, the setup. So it's like they're messing with you. Yep. But again, you know, one of the things about all of this is like these characters aren't fully who they're not baked yet. So it's kind of really interesting to see them feeling it out a little bit. But you know, like this isn't Cloud. Yeah, really. He's not fully him. He's not himself yet. We haven't gotten to that point in the story yet. But you can see, let's really quick, I'm gonna pivot here. I'm gonna talk about optional versus non-optional scenes, right? I am of the camp that everything you see in the game is fully feasible and plausible. If it is in the game, it is something that did happen or potentially could happen. Every date later on in the game is like a conversation that you could absolutely have and see happening, because that's how these characters are. So there, to me, everything is kind of canon in that regard. I'm not throwing anything out with the bathwater and saying, well, that's not the scene that I got, or that's not how I played the game, because what you see is how something would play out with a given character at a given moment in time. Yeah. And I think that makes the story all the richer, because you see that there is not a lot of player input determining how this story is actually going to shake out, versus a Persona game where you have a lot more choice and it's like, well, I'm gonna hang out with Makoto. That's who I'm gonna hang out with, and that's probably the only thing that happens. But that's just wanted to.
Yeah,
everything. No, everything is canon.
It's fun. Yeah, it's funny. The only subdivision I make there, because then we're almost out of time. So the only subdivision I would make there is that I think there are instances in the game where there are characters who like the main character regardless of what you do. I think Yukari, regardless of what the main character does in Persona 3, has very strong feelings about the main character. And Agus, I think Agus as well. I think you could argue, even if you did not do Agus's social link, you know, so there's that, but it's like a little tiny thing. Otherwise, I completely agree. That's not a shade at Mitsuru. I promise you, it's not Mitsuru shade. I love Mitsuru too.
It hasn't. I will put in one final thing on the whole scene that we just talked about is I do feel like Square Enix is still chasing that scene, because we sort of had a, you know, I'm there for you no matter what you think in 16, the beach scene, with Jill and Clive. And you also get that on a brotherly level later on in the game as well. But you can tell that they're still chasing that whole Highwind situation in 16 still.
I think we're going to get a real treat in part 3, because that setup in Gungaga where she says, let me be a hero to you, was like, oh, yes.
I know.
Yes. Yes. You're going to do it, girl. I'm very excited to see how that plays out. And non-optional, that there's romantic tension there that cannot be overlooked, because that conversation could happen many different ways, but there's only one way it transpires in the game. So it's going to be tasty. I'm ready for it. I hope they play the right notes, because that this is going to make or break the series, the trilogy for me. If they can, yeah.
It's still in the balance. For me, the parts that I've enjoyed about Rebirth are going to outweigh anything that's bad about it. And I sort of started to feel like that when they go into the cave at the beginning and they start messing with each other. Like, Barret's messing with Cloud over the Merc thing, and Cloud's messing with Barret over his thing. They're kind of like, they're getting to know each other and becoming a team at that point. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like this game. I like that they went this direction with that. Yeah. And I don't feel like we got a lot of that in the first one. It was just a lot of setup. But thank both of you for joining me today. Yeah, this absolutely. Has been a ton of fun. And I still have some topics left over for next time. And Liana's welcome to join us next time. My son is going to be very jealous. He's wanted to be on my podcast for weeks now. Aww. And if he hears that a friend of mine's daughter got on, I might be in big trouble.
I know.
But thank you.
We might have to let them have their own little setup and chat it out.
Oh, he would. You'd have a taker on that. He's composed music for it already. He's got the theme music for his podcast ready.
That is awesome. I love that creativity. That's what we need in the world.
Speaking of things we need in the world, can I give like 2 minutes more? Because something I wanted to tell you as a scientist.
Go for it.
So the Wabi Sabi thing came from a lecture I went to, where it was a guy who runs the Human Nature Lab at Yale. And the premise of it was, are people hardwired for good? Which I thought was a pretty timely discussion. And basically his answer was yes. And he was like, humans are social creatures. We would not live together if we were not social. The way that we live together is social. He said there's a social suite of characteristics that are pretty unique to humans that make us social. And one of them was friendship. And he was talking about the evolutionary aspect of friendship. He tied all of this to evolution and research that he's done. Basically, friendship makes you more likely to survive. That's part of why you feel good when you spend time with your friends, is because you are doing something that has evolutionarily been borne out to make your success more likely. And I'll give you a good Stella nugget here. You know, he said there's like a half dozen creatures that have capacity to form friendships. It's not common in nature. I told that to Stella. I'm like, you know, humans are one of the few creatures that can form friendships. What's another one? And she looks at me and she goes, elephants. Like, how did you know that? You're four. Like, yes, elephants are one, dolphins are one, some primates are one. But he did an experiment where he also talked about AI and how it interacts with people. And he did an experiment where he had a team of people who were working on a track laying project. It was a virtual track laying project. It was designed to be frustrating. And they would work with a bot in both versions of it. The experiment was that they had a bot that told dad jokes. And my favorite line that he had the whole night, he goes, dad jokes, which are wonderful, by the way. Like, he endorsed dad jokes. Uh-huh. But his research found that the group with the bot that told dad jokes was more engaged with each other and more productive. And his conclusion on that, and people kind of mistook him for, some people kind of mistook him for an AI evangelist, which he was not. He was like, I'm operating under the assumption that AI will be here. And how best to live along with it. And he was saying that the best way to utilize AI is in ways that complement the social suite that we already have, where he has a bot that makes it so the group interacted with each other more. If you have a bot that reminds you of friends' birthdays, that sort of thing. He was saying that's probably the most complementary application of that. And he sort of, he said, okay, so if we're hardwired to goodness, why is the world the way it is? And that's when he left us with the image of the wabi-sabi bowl. And he's like, it might not be perfect at any given moment in time, but he felt that the arc of it is long and that does bend towards goodness. And he did actually do some research to sort of look into some of the things that were about that. And I thought you, as the scientist, Allie, might appreciate somebody who took a look at it. It was probably my favorite thing I learned, and I did want to share it. I wasn't sure I was going to have a chance to share it today, so I'm glad that we got a couple of moments. And also that dad jokes are wonderful. I thought that was, you know, yes. I felt seen in that moment. But I want to thank both of you again. It's been really great chatting with you. I'm looking forward to the next time. Thank you again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining the Amazing Gamers podcast, a Just for Fun production that's recorded whenever Nathan has a little bit of free time and a friend to discuss a cool topic with. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and that you'll circle back with us next time. Until then, may all your gaming be amazing.